Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Squeezes the middle. All right, we're going to be joined by Andrew Brandt in just a hot second, but in the meantime, welcome to your 5 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
All right, very excited to be joined by our next guest, Andrew Brandt, former vice president of the Green Bay Packers, current columnist at Monday Morning Quarterback and host the Business of Sports podcast. Andrew, Ryan Covey, Matt Kolsky, and Ray Ratto. How are you, man? What's going on?
Doing well, guys. Busy because it seems like they were on the precipice of a new deal, which frankly surprises me. I mean, 10 years ago, I covered this thing front to back, and as we know, that came down to an expired agreement, a lockout, litigation, and not getting a deal done to the eve of training camp. Now we're a year away. We're 13 months away from expiration. It's surprising to me that there seems to be kind of a rush to do this.
Well, is the motivation to get this done to avoid the type of things that happened last time?
Yeah. I mean, again, but we're 13 months away, and I guess I'm sort of wondering from a player's point of view, what's the rush? Especially because it seems like the owners more than the players want to push this through before the new year starts. And I have a problem believing that this deal is going to get any worse if they wait. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of spin going on out there right now that the players should take this deal. I'm not so sure.
Let me ask you this, because like you've been in those rooms, or at least close enough to the people who've been in those rooms. How much of this might just be a trial balloon by the owners to see how pliant the players actually are, and that there really isn't a rush to get this done as much as it is a test to see if the union's going to roll over?
You know, I think there's some of that, Ray. I mean, listen, this ownership group is strategic and very savvy, but they want the deal. They really want the deal, and the why is obvious. When you can go to sponsors and networks and say you have no possibility of labor disruption for 10 years, and I'm just thinking, oh, my God. I mean, that's how they get their big contracts. Whereas they go into what I call a stub year, a year at the end of the agreement, and these networks and sponsors are there saying, oh, you know, we don't know if there's going to be labor peace in a year. So there's incredible incentive from management to get this done, which the players need to use as leverage. And when I say leverage, how many times have we heard in the past 5 years, no way, no how, no deal if it's more than 16 games? I don't think any player has not said that. Yeah. And here we are. So we'll see.
I did see Jamal Adams go on Twitter and weigh in favor of extra games before Richard Sherman corrected him publicly on the internet. I want to ask, though, about the sort of adjunct part of this conversation that's been happening, where the NFL, I guess, is saying we'd love to get the CBA passed, but even if we don't, we're going to ram a 14-game playoff field down your throats this coming season. And now, look, I don't know. Maybe the union intends to push back on this and just hasn't yet, but they haven't yet. Do you know, is that even legal for the NFL to do that? And why would the union not immediately say, no, we have to collectively bargain?
You know, when I was in meetings back when I was in the league, they said not only was adding playoff games, quote unquote, legal without consent of the players, but adding regular season games was. Now, the NFL is smart enough to not do the latter without player consent, but they are clearly going to do the former, and we'll see if this ends up in grievances, et cetera. I don't know the specific language. I'm sure it's in the NFL bylaws about adding playoff games. But But let's realistically, I mean, people are making a big deal of that. I don't know if that's such a big deal. One more team, so 50 more players playing one playoff game.
Right.
And the second team in each conference getting a bye, not getting a bye is really what we're talking about. So, I mean, it's just it's one more game on Saturday and Sunday of wild card weekend. To me, you know, that's not a big deal.
Talking to Andrew Brandt, Monday morning quarterback and former VP of the Green Bay Packers, Business of Sports podcast, nice enough to join us for a few minutes. What are some of the other main issues that they're going to be sifting through? Obviously, we know about the increase in the schedule and the playoff teams, et cetera. But what are some of the other key issues that that they have on the table that they're kind of sifting through to get this deal done?
Well, again, this is a long conversation because I think, you know, when you have a multi-issue negotiation, I always say nothing's agreed to until everything's agreed to. But the key issues have always been, to me, the revenue split. And it's complicated, but basically we were at 50-50 in 2010. We went to 47 players, 53 owners for the past 10 years. It looks like the players will get to 48 and potentially 48.5. You know, one percentage point is a few billion dollars. But I was hopeful for the player side, if they're going to give in on the extra game, that they'd get to 49 or closer to 50-50 like they had before. That's a key issue. Another key issue is commissioner power. It looks like Goodell will be out of things that are not integrity issues. Of course, integrity is Deflategate. Integrity is anything to do with cheating or gambling or competitive balance. I'm sensing he may get out of the domestic violence game, but we'll see. Another issue is this minimum spending, and I don't know if anything's new with that. Team spending is going to be looked at over a four-year period, which I thought was way too low. If they got to 89% of team spending, of cap spending, over 4 years, I thought that should be a much quicker look than 4 years. So we'll see if anything's done with that. And then I did find out, as I just tweeted, marijuana testing is really all but going away. They're going from 4 month window of testing to 2 week window, which would be the start of training camp for 2 weeks. The threshold is moving from 50 nanoliters to 150 nanoliters. The penalties are drastically reduced. They're really not going to be suspensions. You know, that to me is a compromise with just scrapping marijuana testing altogether, which I thought was a possibility. So those are some of the things that are going to come out of this.
It is, when all this is boiled down, is it likely that the revenue split will be the thing that is most contentiously battled for? And in your opinion, if not your actual knowledge, what is the drop dead number for the league to not go past?
I think we've seen it. It's 48.5, and the 48.5 kicks in with the 17 games. You know, listen, I said for months the only way this deal gets done is extra games, when the players were saying no way we'll play a 17th or 18th game, because the players had nothing of value to give to ownership. If the players want to make gains in this deal, what do they have to give? They didn't have commissioner power. They didn't have marijuana testing. They didn't have franchise tag. That's all the owners. So it seems like their goal was to the revenue split getting up, and it gets up a point and a half by the time the 17 games kicks in. So we'll see if that's enough. I mean, they're going to spin that that's worth $5 billion over 10 years. I'm not sure. Again, I'm trying to take the player's side here. I'm not sure that's enough for something that was a non-negotiable for however long, never go past 16 games.
Broadly speaking, I think it feels like my entire lifetime, the conversation around the NFL Players Union has been they get trucked by ownership whenever they come into these negotiations, in large part because an incredibly large body of players with a sort of wildly diverse in terms of what they're making and largely non-guaranteed contracts and short careers have very little stomach for a work stoppage. given that scenario, is there any way to empower the NFL Players Association more than it traditionally has been? Is there anything to be done to sort of give them the capability to push back more on some of these things?
It's a great question. And, you know, full disclosure, I was asked and thought about running for the position that Damaurice Smith has. I chose not to a few years ago. I didn't think that was the right race to do it. And I thought that it was going to be something where I couldn't keep up a lot of the stuff I enjoy doing. But I think that it has to be two fronts. On the collective front, I think the union has to hold their feet to the fire on things like minimum spending, on getting back to 50-50 in terms of money and splits, on really getting stronger shares of future revenues like biometric data and gambling. On the individual front, that's where you really can make gains. When you have a superstar quarterback that's going to do a contract like a Pat Mahomes to really push for a full guarantee, because once you break the seal on these deals, they're easier to come for the next guy and the next guy and the next guy. So it's a great question. It has to be handled broadly from the collective point of view of the union and the individual point of view of agents that have star players, because you're never going to make gains on medium players. You got to make the gains on the stars, the Aaron Rodgers, the Russell Wilsons, the Pat Mahomes, and that can trickle down.
You always struck me as a Marvin Miller type, though.
You know, a couple of the guys are asking me my thoughts on this, and, you know, I'm trying to give them insights, but I do want to be respectful of Damaurice Smith and the way he's running things. You know, will I advise guys in the future on this? Perhaps. But I just think that leadership probably should be an African-American, and that was my decision back then.
Who, at this point, who are the owners' point people on negotiations other than Roger Goodell? I mean, he doesn't go into that room alone. Who are the guys around him that have the most sort of labor expertise or have the most throw weight to put into a negotiation?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, because in the last one, there's some owners that aren't even there anymore. Jerry Richardson of Carolina was very involved. It's the usual suspects that people think of with Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft. He also seeks a lot of counsel with kind of the old guard, with the Maras and the Rooneys and people like that. And there is a negotiating committee that includes Kraft, that includes Rooney, and that includes Clark Hunt, the now Super Bowl champion owner. So I think those are some of the influential people. But beyond the owners, I think Roger relies heavily on Jeff Pasch, his counsel, lead counsel, who's very involved in this, and his management counsel lawyers that are very involved as well.
Hey, Andrew, appreciate your time. Thanks so much and great insight, man. Enjoy your work tremendously, and we always learn a little something. Although I am jealous, both my partners asked you a good question. Maybe I'll get one next time, okay?
That's a good question.
Thanks, Andrew. All right, good stuff. I know what, no Chicago Bear representation in those meetings, man?
Yeah, but Virginia's basically an original owner. Come on now.
Yeah, they told her the meetings were in Peoria. Yeah, so she took an Uber, but yeah, she was duped again. You know, if I'm a player, like seriously though, if I'm Damaurice Smith and the Players Association, the fact that the owners are so hot about getting this done should be a pretty clear indicator that this is probably awful for you and you should take your time.
Yeah, if they're trying to shove a deal through 13 months before the current deal expires, it's a deal that benefits them.
Right?
Well, that goes without saying. The problem is,
damn,
it's in identifying what the real wedge issue is. And based on what Andrew was saying, it sounds like it's really the revenue split more than anything else.
Yeah.
And if the NFL, you know, if the league wants to insist on 48-5, I think the players should insist on 50 and then try to pound it down to, say, 49 and a quarter or something.
Yeah. They're talking about billions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. But that's really the only thing that the players can get if they're willing to play more games. Now, I don't think the extra two playoff games is that huge an issue for the players. But if you can walk up to them and say, here's what goes into the player pool now, because we're going to be snippy about playoff games and a 17th game, then I think that could galvanize the union better than, you know, the logistics about a 17th game, which is the stuff that we care about that really has very little impact in the room.
All right. By the way, I want to get to a piece of breaking news from the NBA. This is per Mark Stein. The Warriors just made it official. Klay Thompson will not play this regular season. He's officially been ruled out for the rest of the regular season. Makes sense. I think there was one school of thought that maybe getting a look at Klay at the end of the year, if he was medically cleared, might be good heading into the Olympics and just seeing how he looks, right? But obviously, Klay's long-term sustainability after signing a max contract after tearing his ACL, that's the most important thing in all this, Klay's long-term health.
We talked about this yesterday in the context of Steph's injury, that it's one thing when a broken hand heals to bring a guy back to get a little run at the end of the season. Dealing with a ligament injury, a rehabbing ACL, like it's the sort of thing that gets stronger on a day-to-day basis, and there's not really like a, okay, it's fixed now, right. Day.
The x-ray said you're good.
Right.
Doesn't work.
So it's harder to pin down exactly when a guy's going to be ready, and it makes much more sense to use an abundance of caution, whereas Steph is going to reach a point, sounds like in the next couple weeks, where there's literally no added risk of bringing it. Like, his hand is as good as it ever was. And I don't know that we won't know that about Klay until, you know, a year or two into the future. And given that, I think it's interesting that the very next tweet after Mark Stein saying the Warriors have ruled him out is this: Thompson remains in contention for a spot in the United States 12-man roster for the Tokyo Olympics.
Klay's not playing in the Olympics this summer.
I still think he is.
You do?
Yep.
And I it's not that he wouldn't be great and that he probably doesn't deserve it, but couldn't you find 12? Well, I know you can. There's got to be 12 American basketball players that are just as good as or better than Klay Thompson, considering Klay Thompson is rehabbed off of a torn ACL.
I don't know if it's about that as much as if he wants to play.
It's just that simple? I mean, there's a lot of guys that want to play on the Olympic team.
Well, no. I mean, I think he'll be given the opportunity if he wants to.
There's only 12 spots, though. I think a lot of guys will want to play. You think he's got it like that off of a torn ACL?
I suppose that the ACL is a question. But I'm assuming, you know, I don't think the games are till late June. And I don't think the ACL will be as nearly as much of an issue at that point. I mean, we're talking about April and early May versus late. That's an extra month and a half. So I don't think it's going to be a knee issue. I think it's going to be, does he make it? Does he make the cut? And does he want to play? I'm confident he'll want to play.
I'm sure he'll want to play.
As far as making the cut, I think he's a particularly good player to put on a team like this, because he needs a lot less touches than most of the guys that are going to be in contention. And
that's
he
great
can
point.
Like, his skill is pretty remarkable in terms of being able to rail jumpers without having to be much more involved than that. I think that's particularly useful for an Olympic roster.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a problem if he is healthy enough to make that team, because among other things, he has that level of cachet. In the same way that Curry does, really. And if you're trying to win the Olympics, and they desperately want to this time because the world is catching up with them in leaps and bounds, they want to have as much continuity as possible. They can't just roll the balls out like they used to and you say, we have the 12 best players, go ahead, see what you can do.
Also, by the way, we're not, this doesn't mean he's one of the top 12 players in the NBA. A lot of the top 30 are not from this country. So if you look at the actual U.S.
Well, that's what I'm looking at right now.
The pool, I don't think it's that much of a stretch to put him in the top 12, especially if a guy like Kevin Durant isn't quite ready.
Yeah, or even Kyrie Irving, maybe.
That's, well, yeah. I mean, I would think Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant both have less of a chance to be available physically than Klay Thompson.
If you're Bob Myers, do you want Klay playing in the Olympics this summer? The Steph thing, no problem. Do you want Klay Thompson? You put the truth serum in Bob Myers. Hey, Bob, you want Klay playing in the Olympics this summer? It's Bob saying.
I won't speak for Bob, but if I was Bob,
I'm asking you to speculate.
Yeah, and I have no idea how he thinks about it is what I'm saying, but if I was in his position, I wouldn't care. I truly would not care. My attitude is Klay Thompson will be playing basketball in the month of August. So he'll either be doing it in a gym somewhere in LA or in a gym somewhere in wherever the heck the Olympics are this year. Where are they?
Tokyo.
He'll either be playing against far lesser competition in Tokyo, or he'll be playing against far lesser competition in Los Angeles. It doesn't matter a ton to me which one. And I just don't see the Olympics roster as being like a horribly taxing thing.
I don't know if it's taxing or not, because not every game is going to be easy. You know, you play the Serbs, you play the Spanish, you play the Argentines.
It's all true.
Those are going to be high leverage games, but it's like we talked about earlier with Curry. It's just you can't basically not want to play him because you're afraid he's get hurt, because you may as well at that point just tell him he's retired. I think the only issue is whether or not his knee is showing any signs of balkiness. I would be very conservative on that end, but if I think that's as 100% as a operated knee can be 100%, I'm saying go.
I 100% agree with the knee thing. Obviously, if there's any questions about the knee, he's not going.
And that's why I think it's relevant, because that's going to be the first true test to be in that stage. And it's not like an NBA regular season where, you know, you can sit him down for a while, you can call up a replacement within the G League, maybe you can make a trade. There's 12 spots. Like, you can't, if you get over there and it's, oh, by the way, knee flared up third quarter of game one, Clay's not going to be available for us, you kind of leave yourself a little short there. And I know still 11 guys should be enough to get that team over the line, but you'd want 12 guys that you know for sure could play the whole tournament. That's what I'm saying. And I don't know that
July 24th, by the way, is when the Olympics start. So, like,
we're
talking
it's a few months, yeah.
The difference between being able to come back at the end of the regular season, that's a lot of extra rehab. And
it's, well, it's roughly about a month and a half after the season, you know, from the start of the playoffs. And really, they're going to want to just see them, you know, see them play at least a few exhibitions here and there. So it's really about a month and a half process. I think that, you know, that's plenty of time to find out if the knee is structurally not just sound, but very sound.
Right.
Just for the record, the NBA season ends April 15th. The regular season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if it takes a month and a half to prep for the Olympics, that's not going to start.
It'd be the start of the finals. I think they'd want to start seeing people.
Right, but that gives them an extra month and a half after.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a decent amount of extra time. And look, I think we all agree, if there's any questions about the knee, the team is not going to want him, and the Warriors would not want him to go. But I think there's a pretty good chance there's not much of a question about the knee at that point. At that point, he'll be over a year removed from the injury. And again, I think you're going to be asking him to play 18 minutes as a basically standstill shooter. So I just, to me, that's actually a better landing than NBA games in the rehab process.
I totally agree. No, your point's very well taken. And actually, you know, to be perfectly honest, like I'd love this for Klay Thompson, just the same way I'd love it for Steph Curry. These guys, they want to play for Team USA. They want to go win a gold medal. That's awesome. The timing stinks in that respect, but I also feel like you'd be remiss if you didn't ponder whether or not this was actually the best decision for Klay Thompson long term.
Sure.
To change the subject back to the NFL.
Lay it on me.
We have our first player reaction. J.J. Watt tweeting out, hard no on that proposed CBA.
Richard Sherman basically said the same yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw the Jamal Adams, Richard Sherman exchange, but essentially Jamal Adams was, I don't want to hit him too hard, but
no, lay it on us.
I think fair to say, cluelessly tweeting about what he wanted, and in fact has now deleted the tweet. And Richard Sherman, it basically said, hey, more regular season games, more playoff games, more money, everybody wins. And Richard Sherman retweeted him and said, call me, brother. It's never it's never that simple. Got to go deeper than that in this. And obviously, Jamal Adams called him and then deleted the tweet where he said everybody wins. So yeah. I think guys like Sherman and Watt are leadership for a reason, right? Yeah. I mean, that's
Although Watt strikes me, and I think fairly so, as a far less strident labor
leader. Oh, yes.
Leader. J.J. Watt want to make sure the cameras are rolling before he does anything.
Well, no, but it's not just that. It's that Richard Sherman is my idea of a guy. If this was 10 years from now, I think I'd be fine if he was the head of the union.
I don't think it's at all out of the question that Richard Sherman hits up law school when his career is over and ends up becoming a union rep in some way from the outside when his career is over.
He would have to hit he'd have to get a law degree. Yeah, they won't hire anybody who doesn't have.
Yeah, degree. But I think he could take care of that in a couple of years, to be totally honest with you. And there is not a better player / off-field leader in sports than Richard Sherman, I don't think.
I think we can all agree with that. All right, 888-957-9570. A couple of questions for you. One, do you want to see Klay Thompson playing in the Olympics this summer? I'd like to hear from Warriors fans on that. Also, we've had a lot of news in the NFL today. We continue that conversation if you'd like to weigh in. But there was some great sound from the world of baseball in reaction to all this stuff going on with the Houston Astros. Big Poppy going old school, dropping the snitch bomb on Mike Fiers. We got a little sound to get to there. Everybody's had their turn, and today was Big Poppy's. So we will talk about that on the other side. In the meantime, this segment sponsored by Nutrisystem for Men. Now is the time to try Nutrisystem for Men. See how simple losing weight can be with Nutrisystem. The meals come to your door. You eat the food, and you'll lose the weight. Order at Nutrisystem.com/radio. That's Nutrisystem.com/radio. Restrictions apply. Call or see website for details. You're listening to 95.7 The Game.
Demon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Bet your rear end it does. By the way, Warriors Live, top of the hour. Whitey Gleason, John Dickinson out there at the Chase Center getting you ready. Dubs, Rockets. If you're just joining us, breaking news. Klay Thompson will not play this season. That announced earlier today, Mark Stein reporting it. The Golden State Warriors have said, regardless of his progress, Klay Thompson will not wear a uniform this year as a member of the Golden State Warriors. Of course, he's still rehabbing from the ACL that he tore in the NBA Finals. Clearly, Klay Thompson's objective is to play in the Olympics this summer, as is Steph Curry's, but it will not be with the Golden State Warriors. So if you're hoping to see Steph, Wiggins, and Klay, you're going to have to wait until next season for the best. I will say this. The one thing I want to say about it is rehabbing is such a grind, such a, you know, an arduous journey, and it can be really nomadic. You're really detached from the team. And yeah, Warriors have done a great job, you know, having Klay around. I mean, it's the Warriors. It's Klay. It's a family, and I get that. But you work your ass off to try and get back on a basketball floor, and that was the one thing I was thinking. If he was medically cleared and he was strongly desiring to play, it's been that maybe that light at the end of the tunnel for him, that, you know, that carrot dangled out there, like the return to the floor. Because Klay, you know, more than I think a lot of basketball players, more than most athletes, I think we feel like Klay loves what he does and has a passion for the game. And having the opportunity to get back out there as soon as he's ready, I think that's something he'd like to check that box from his rehab, is what I'm saying. So I think if it was, if that was on the table for him, I think he would have relished the opportunity to do it.
I think one should never underestimate the Warriors' interest in being ultra-conservative on all injuries, particularly those involving their big-ticket items.
Without question.
I just don't know that there's a real value in rushing him back, not because of the season, but because you want to be sure on sure with a knee. I mean, if this turns out to be a situation where he comes back, has a setback, all of a sudden, Now the knee's problematic for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I mean, isn't Kevin Durant all the evidence we need to argue against rushing anyone back ever?
Well, that's what I think is the underlying fact about all of this,
yeah.
Is they found out, not that they rushed him back,
no.
But that being anything but very careful, and now seemingly over-careful to somewhat people's thoughts, is the way for them to go. Because, and I hate to use this word, but I'm going to do it in this situation anyway. The Warriors have an asset that needs to be preserved. And it's more important, if all other things are equal, that they preserve that than anything else. I mean,
that's 100% true.
I think, you know, the Olympics is a different thing, and that is entirely dependent on how desperately he wants to be an Olympian. If he could take it or leave it, and I'm Bob Myers, I'd say, look, if you're not passionate about it, don't bother.
Go ahead and relax. Rocco needs some love.
Yeah, but, you know, you raised a point, you know, moments ago about, you know, the Chinese shoe company that, you know, that Clay does business with, they may want to see him.
Credit where due. That was actually a 954 texter who raised that point. And it makes sense to me that if Anta is the sort of company that wants to put pressure on its athletes, they may very well want him to expose himself as much as possible to the Asian markets. And I meant that in a PG way. I know it sounded weird.
Although I could also see if they were pushing him to do something he didn't want to do, he could drop the sponsorship.
Totally.
Yeah,
so,
maybe not the best sponsor.
I don't know
so
that they would
only
push
so
too hard.
Much, there's only so much leverage, you know, the company can
totally.
Can
but hell, he may feel like, hey, I'm an anti-athlete, and if more people in greater Asia care more about me, that benefits me. Who knows? But all things equal, he has said he would like to play in the Olympics. And I would guess he'd really be excited about an opportunity to play alongside Steph in the Olympics.
For yeah. sure.
Yeah, I think there'd be much less motivation if Curry wasn't intent on going.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of looking at, and again, this is neither here nor there. I mean, Clay is clearly one of the 12 best basketball players that Team USA could produce. I'm just thinking of guys that could fill out this roster, you know, and play in that backcourt. I mean, you got Kemba, Harden, Beal, George, Steph, Russ, Chris Paul.
And not a one of those guys is really a spot-up shooter.
I know. Yeah, I'm looking for a real shooter.
Like, I mean, I think the guys you'd be looking at in place of Clay would be Bradley Beal, Devin Booker.
I said Beal. I did.
Okay. Devin Booker is that kind of shooter. I think Chris Middleton can be that kind of shooter. But honestly, even those guys, if I'm looking for somebody to spot up and drain a three, Clay's the guy.
Yeah. I think Beal is the most like-for-like replacement. You get it on the defensive end, too.
A little bit, but smaller. And again, just not
that
obviously not as good of a shooter.
Yeah, yeah. Because Clay's like one of the best shooters.
Because there's only one guy on this 44-man list that's as good of a shooter as Clay Thompson.
Right.
It's his teammate.
Yeah. Draymond Green.
That's right.
Let's go.
You said it.
Let's go to Sam in Sacramento. Just wants to talk a little about the CBA. And then I got some big poppy sound I want to play. Go ahead, Sam. You love it.
Hey, gentlemen. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
The pleasure's ours, Sam.
A lot of moving parts on this collective bargaining thing. But so I'll try to keep it down to about three or four here.
Fire away.
First of all, 10 years is way too long, especially with the financial proven track record of the NFL. So that would be something from the player's point of view I'd want to look at. And then the other thing is there's also a lot of revenue streams still untapped, whether it's the streaming services or, you know, all the legalized gambling that's still in its infancy and, you know, potential revenue stream going on there.
Sure.
The other thing I think the players would want to look at is this unbalanced schedule, because it sounds like you're going to have 8 games at home, 8 and away, and then these neutral site games, which means travel either overseas or a neutral site might be a Denver, Arizona game, an Albuquerque, El Paso. But I think they would want more details on that kind of thing.
I'm not sure they're going to be neutral site games. I haven't heard anything.
The only people who have said that are fans.
Right.
No one with any knowledge of what's actually happening has suggested neutral sites.
Yeah, nitwits and crackpots.
Oh.
Well, leave me out of this.
Well, sorry. I guess I fall into one of those categories.
No,
we're talking about the people who put the idea in your head, not you. You're on scholarship. Calm down.
Thanks for the call, Sam. Appreciate it. I think the main point there is there's a lot on the table here, and for the owners to want to get this pushed through in like 48 hours, pretty clear indicator to the players, slow down. Let's just take a breath. And
you found out right away how this is playing. Yeah. You may not have heard it directly from the union, but and in terms of the neutral site games, there aren't 16 neutral sites.
Well, I mean, technically there are.
You're not gonna play a game in Albuquerque where the capacity's 45,000. You know, you're gonna.
What about wherever the Raiders were gonna go in San Antonio?
Yeah, I mean, it's
the Alamo Dome.
There we go.
I mean, you're not gonna go to Tuscaloosa or Birmingham.
I don't know, some of those SEC stadiums, pretty large capacity.
They're not coming out to see the NFL, I guarantee.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah, they don't care.
I mean, there's a reason why after the old USFL, nobody put a team in Birmingham again. There's Alabama football, there's Auburn football.
And the Birmingham
Barons.
And then
there's stuff that other people do.
Yeah, no doubt. I wanted to get to this sound real quick. Speaking of the Birmingham Barons, as we transition to baseball, see what I did there, Matt?
I like it.
Thank you. I had a Birmingham Barons lid back in the day. It was sick.
Great. Hat.
Yeah, it is. Big Poppy, who, let's face it, big jabroni. I mean, this guy, big phony. Big Poppy, like, stop, okay? We're all glad that he's okay, for sure, after what happened last year. But I was waiting for somebody to go the big S word. And, of course, Big Poppy.
I'm mad at this guy, the pitcher that came out talking about it. And let me tell you why. Oh, after you make your money, after you get your ring, you decide to talk about it? Why don't you talk about it during the season when it was going on? Why you didn't say, I don't want to be no part of, or now? So you look like a snitch. You know what I mean? Why you got to talk about it after? Why don't you, that's my problem, you know. Why nobody say anything while it was going on? People is not stupid. You know, like if I heard that, if I'm a fan that come to that stadium every home game like we have, at some point I'm going to hear that banging. And I'm talking about as a fan, okay? And they're going to come out, how come there's this banging going on every time we are hitting? You know, like, it was something that it was, from what I have seen, seemed like it was something that it came to the point that it was obvious, too obvious. You know what I'm saying?
What is he talking about?
Lord only knows. First of all, what was Mike Fiore supposed to do as a member of the team, right? Like, it's hard enough to come out in a situation like this and go on the record and be real about what happened. Like, you're going to get enough pushback from that alone in the moment to do it? Like, you're officially betraying everyone in your clubhouse. I don't know. That would be really tough to do. And I don't know. Have you ever done something and then felt bad about it later?
Well, let's not even – I don't think that even matters, because is Big Poppy trying to say if Mike Fiore had come out as a member of the team and said, hey, my team's cheating and I'm not here for it, that, oh, then Big Poppy would not have called him a snitch? Because that's absolute BS. He called him a snitch because he talked about something from the locker room. And there are two things for me on this. The first one is, snitch is a dumb word. It's a dumb concept. And the don't snitch thing is literally the worst of us.
You look like a snitch.
Yeah, it is. First of all, snitching is not a bad thing. I'm sorry. And I know we're going to get a bunch of texts about Kolsky's a snitch. Fine.
You look like a snitch.
I don't care. What Mike Fiore did is an obvious good. When someone comes out and, quote, snitches about, say, I don't know, someone being a murderer or someone stealing millions of dollars. Like, when you tell the authorities about people committing a crime, that's a good thing.
You look like a snitch.
People shouldn't commit crimes. So the whole concept is asinine. And the notion that, like, oh, yeah, well, Mike Fiore really made all his millions after his 5.22 ERA season as a member of the 2017 Astros when he was left off the playoff roster. Shut up, Big Poppy. He didn't cash in Detroit the following year. I promise. It's ridiculous. That entire commentary is ridiculous. And that guy cheated.
Right. Above all else.
We know you cheated.
Takes one to know one.
Let me suggest that we keep the timeline foremost here. He didn't say anything in 2017 because his teammates were doing it. And by the time he'd gotten to Oakland, it was fairly common knowledge that the Astros were doing something.
And teams had complained to Major League Baseball about it.
Notably the A's.
Yeah.
And I would be willing to bet, without knowing this for sure, that either David Forrest or Billy Beane or Bob Melvin or a teammate would have gone to Fires and said, what are those guys doing? And at that point, Fires, his duty is to be loyal to the team he's currently on. It's not about being a snitch. It's about, I work for these guys now. And he gave them the answer. And so that when the MLB investigation happened, they went to Fires as one of the guys who was on that team and who conveniently was now on a team that was being adversely affected by it. So it's not a matter of disloyalty. But what I do understand about David Ortiz's viewpoint is that he played in an era in which, even if you were getting wronged, if you couldn't figure it out yourself, you didn't go and yell about it.
Right.
So it's a baseball culture thing that whistleblowers aren't rewarded. It's true in all walks of life in America. We hate whistleblowers. We could say what we want about them, but we hate them.
Right. And it's a trash way for us to live.
Yes, it is. I'm not arguing that, but I'm just telling you, as a reality, we always turn on the whistleblower.
How about this?
They had to put in laws.
No, I get it.
To defend these.
I get it. And I'm just saying that's stupid. It's the worst of our society. But how's this? This is another way to go about the David Ortiz thing. All right. When David Ortiz was ready to wash out of baseball after busting with the Twins for 2 years, making less than $1 million, and then got traded to the Boston Red Sox, where making between $1 and $6 million, he absolutely knocked the crap out of the ball. While we all know, because he tested positive and was in a report, he was using performance-enhancing drugs, I don't think he probably would have gotten the five-year, 70-something million-dollar contract he got after that, or the 15-plus million per year he made the next 5 years of his career. Is he giving that money back because he cheated?
No.
So then what are you talking about?
What am I talking
about? No, David Ortiz. What is he talking about? He could not be more full of it.
You look like a snitch.
You guys are actually agreeing with each other.
I know. I like
it. I understand it.
I literally liked David Ortiz until today.
Yeah. I think this is about you never turn state's evidence to the cops. I think that's how he views this.
Yeah.
And you can decide that it's nonsense. And I support your right to do so. But I'm trying to figure out why he said what he said. And I think it's because he played in baseball at a time where you never rolled.
Fine.
And
but
I think,
if he can't think for
that's
himself,
what we're hearing.
That's okay. I'm not disputing that. But if he can't think for himself, I'm going to call him a jackass. Because it's a jackass thing to say.
I'm not saying you shouldn't call him a jackass.
I'm
saying that I get why he said it.
Fair enough.
And whatever inconsistencies abound in what he said, I still get what he said.
Are whistleblowing and snitching the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, yeah.
I mean,
it's just a different way to describe it.
Snitches are not protected under the law. Whistleblowers are.
Fair enough.
It's an insulting, yeah. It's an insulting word for a whistleblower. That's what it is.
I don't know what the legal term is, but whistleblower to me is somebody who goes to the authorities when they see wrongdoing, whereas snitches can snitch to anybody.
I guess.
A semantic difference, but.
Either way, it's the same difference here. Fires is certainly more whistleblower than snitch by Ray's definition. And either way, snitch is used colloquially to talk about people who report to the authorities things that were before then secret.
And by the way, and a texter pointed this out, and I don't know all the specifics of, and I don't think we really will ever know the true specifics of Big Poppy getting shot down in the Dominican Republic, but somebody snitched on the guy that shot Big Poppy, and I think he probably wanted to know who shot him, right?
That's a great point.
Like,
how is he angry at the guy who told the cops who shot him in the back?
Right.
And let me...
Probably not.
Let me offer one other thing. Who's being investigated now? The Boston Red Sox.
Yeah.
Who are the two uniformed people who have lost their jobs.
One of them is in the Red Sox organization,
and the other is a Hispanic, as well.
Yeah,
and I think
talking about Hinch then.
No, I'm talking about Beltran.
Beltran.
And I think there's some sensitivity there that he feels like, you know, we're taking an inordinate amount of the blame here.
Well, and you're onto something, because not only did he call Mike Fires a snitch, he also defended Jose Altuve.
Altuve, to me, might be the best hitter in the game. But look at where he got caught into the mug that he's into now. I don't know how he's going to be able to deal with all the trash coming from fans and everybody every time he step on that plate. So if you might see him this year struggle, I don't think it's going to be because he's missing knowing what's coming. Your mind play a big role in the game. It's going to be a huge distraction for the game for a while.
Yeah. Shit, just shame on him. Yeah. I'm so disgusted by Big Poppy right now.
Sounds like it. It's true, though. It's aggravating. It is.
He's pre-excusing Jose Altuve sucking because he doesn't know what's coming anymore.
Right.
I just... He's saying this guy's the best hitter in the game, but he's not mentally strong enough to deal with people yelling at him while he's at the plate. That's what Big Poppy just said. It's such crap.
And you know what? I got to be honest. I feel like the Astros, as far as, you know, from a talent standpoint, we know they're one of the best teams in baseball. There's only the third favorite to win the World Series this year. The third highest projected team to win the World Series this year. They're going to be very good. And, you know, we'll see to what level this galvanizes them or to what level this tears them apart, but make no mistake about it. The Astros probably going to be a playoff team this year, and they're going to probably compete for the World Series this year. And I think that'll be their way of, you know, illustrating to all of us, hey, we didn't need to know what was, you know, what pitch was coming in order to have success and in order to win the World Series in 2017. But it also makes it, this thing is not going away anytime soon. And it's going to really annoy the crap out of a lot of people when the Houston Astros are in the postseason this year.
There's a very clear dynamic here as to why this story isn't going away. Because it's the start of spring training, and spring training is when writers have more access to more players on a daily basis than any other sport. So there are a lot of them who are always going to go to player X or player Y or former player Z and go, what do you think of this Astros thing? So there's always going to be another log tossed on the fire. And today it was Ortiz. Tomorrow it will be somebody else. Somebody else will say something and we will run with it. And that's why this story won't go away. And then when the Red Sox thing comes out, there'll be more questions about it. This thing is a self-perpetuating fire. And in fact, Michael Bauman mentioned the mine, I think it's in Centralia, Pennsylvania, that exploded in 1962. Oh. It was a coal mine. And because it exploded the way it did, the fire is still going today. And I think this has a little bit of that feel to it.
Yeah, stuff like this just extends the life. There's just, frankly, we didn't need to hear from David Ortiz at all.
You look like a snitch.
And hearing from him in this way just extends the life of a dumb scandal that baseball would like to get past.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.